kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Gosh, morning. Where are you located? Or is it just a Sunday version of morning for you?
It's morning somewhere. I'm East Coast, 5 p.m. for me.
So. Gotcha. Yeah, I'm recovering from brunch, so it, you know, it may as well be morning.
It's a late brunch.
Well, it's not so much that the brunch was late as that the effects of it, but I'm good. Ready to be professional, in a good mood, talking about use your words. We're not rolling, are we?
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me today, I have two fantastic guests from Smiling Buddha Games, Julian Spillane, Brent Black, Brentel Floss. Fellas, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
I'm enjoying my new first name of Brentel.
Brentel
Black. It's been a long time coming. Finally got that legally changed.
It's like Mustin. You just change it to whatever works best for you.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, go with your whims whenever.
So, nice mononym. Mm-hmm. Should just be Brentel, no Black.
Right.
The Brentel. So you guys are joining today. You just released your game, Use Your Words. Tell us about the game.
You want to take it, Julian?
I'll let you take it.
All right.
Flip a coin.
All right. Heads, it's me. Use Your Words is a party game that you play typically in the same room or watching the same gameplay screen via a stream. Could be Beam, Twitch, whatever. But it's a party game where you fill in the blanks. We set up the jokes. You write the punchlines. And so, you know, the first objective is to write something funny. But also there's an escape hatch we call the house decoy button that can write an answer for you. So that can lead to all kinds of head games and intrigue as you try to figure out how to vote for your favorite answer, but not vote for the one that was built into the game or one of the traps laid for you by other players. But the basic idea is just a fun party game that that gives you a platform to make jokes and have a good time with your friends.
Which, those decoys, holy shit, man. There was one game where, how many rounds are there in a game?
Seven.
Seven? I think I hit six of them.
Oh, wow.
It was like every round, I'm like, oh, this one's really funny. Fuck, it's another decoy.
Yeah, we, first off, I appreciate that. I wrote a lot of those. One thing we tell players that are doing that is feel free to vote strategically if you always find yourself voting for the house answers, because nobody's really keeping tabs on whether the answer is your number one favorite if you feel like it's a house answer or a house decoy. You know, it's okay to avoid that minefield.
True. Someone I was playing with said, yeah, I just vote for the ones with profanity. So I guess that works.
And some of our house answers are a little blue.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there.
Yeah, we really tried to make it where even if you play it for hours and hours and hours, you still are not 100% going to know which ones are and are not decoys, using different styles of writing, emojis, spelling, grammar, and just kind of different kinds of references. We've got everything from witty, sophisticated Fraser Crane kind of jokes all the way down to, you know, the kind of stuff you might see in a Twitch stream chat and everything in between.
The first time that I got a decoy answer that was all lowercase, I'm like, gloves are off. Anything can happen here. If they're typing in all lowercase, oh man, shit is going down.
Yep. Capitalization is our secret weapon.
Yeah, most people, you know, lazy people on the internet, they'll type with, you know, they're not gonna capitalize things because they don't have time to hold a shift key or to like tap that uppercase button on their phone. So you get all lowercase. But you guys, oh man, I didn't see that coming. So tell me about the mini games in this. Clearly, any kind of party game needs to have mini games to keep things fresh and ever changing. So what are the different games that people could play in this?
Well, we've got four mini games in the game. We've got Sub the Title, which is a riff or take kind of on Riff Tracks or Mystery Science Theater 3000. You're shown a foreign film, and you're given a portion of the subtitle, sometimes no subtitle at all, and you just have to complete or write what you think is going on in the scene that you think would be contextually funny. It's probably the most different thing in our game from any other party game, and it's one that resonates so far with the audience really well. We've also got Extra Extra, which is you're shown an image, you're asked to headline it, caption it, write a clickbait article, title, any kind of textual content that would go along with the image. We've got Blank-O-Matic, which is a bit more of one of the more traditional types of minigames in our game, where you're given a text prompt and asked to complete it. And then we've got Survey Says, which is our lightning round, where points are doubled, and you're given three prompts textually that you need to fill in.
And how many variations, I know you have Sub the Title, that's the film clip. How many film clips are in the game? Like, how currently deep do these go?
Currently, we're around 80 that are in the game. I headed up the Sub the Title department, basically, and I think the number of clips that were mined over the course of, like, the 2 years of working on the game is somewhere in the, like, multi-hundreds, 300-400. But we kept, for the initial release, we kept the 80 or so that really worked the best, where, like, people weren't stumped most of the time, and players immediately had an idea and could just jump in.
Yeah, it's brings up an interesting point. We really took the attitude of quality over quantity for this game. We were showing the game a lot really early on, too, at things like MAGFest and various other cons. And anytime we'd see friends or people who are seeing the game for the first time trip up on a prompt, we'd make a note of it, or at least a mental note. And then if we saw it happen multiple times, it gets to the point where it's not you, it's me. And maybe that prompt has to go. So there's a lot of, like, killing your babies, this one just isn't funny, or this one just isn't inspiring people. Let's get rid of it, or, retool it or shelve it.
Why do I have a feeling that, like, killing your babies could be something that would actually eventually make it into this game?
I've seen a lot of Twitch streams this week. I am sure somebody is out there filling in a response involving that very topic. I promise you.
Have you guys been hitting up the Twitch and Beam streams quite a bit with this game so far?
Obsessively.
Same. Yeah. Like, I just, what is really exciting to me is that at this point, over the last few days, the sun never sets on this game. I'll wake up bleary eyed and, like, this is, my new addiction. I'll just check the Twitter feed, or I'll check Twitch, and morning Eastern time, well, you've got Australians playing it in their evenings. And then around the time that calms down, you've got UK and Europe people playing it in their streams. And by the time that calms down, you've got North America. So, yeah, there's almost always a little stream to pop in. It's really fun to, like, jump in and, like, tell people tips and tricks and, like, be there if people have questions and want to know behind-the-scenes stuff. But it's also, like, the greatest marketing, like, market research ever to just, when people don't know you're watching, it's like that actually helps you make the game better more than anything else, because you see any place they're having trouble or any prompt that you might decide just isn't quite as good as you thought, stuff like that for the future. It's the best. So yeah, I've been watching it a lot.
I watch almost entirely anonymously unless it's someone I know streaming and they want me to participate. It's great to see bugs happen, as much as they riddle me with anxiety when I do see them. Because, like, we're a small team, right? We couldn't afford a giant army of quality QA testers, just because it's a networked game and there's so many things that can happen, right? Six players playing concurrently on a ton of servers and all kinds of synchronization. So we tested it as thoroughly as we possibly could, but we knew, like, some user is going to encounter a 1 in 1,000 bug that we've never seen before. And so Twitch has been really great. And part of the reason we did a lot of pre-release streaming, other than raising awareness, was getting like a little bit of a beta test going. So like, okay, making notes of things we need to fix in the first few weeks of launch and just constantly watching and iterating. It's been great.
Hey, Brent, speaking of bugs, did anybody else have that bug that happened while we were playing?
I remember watching your stream because it was the first Beam one, but I've probably watched 100 since. Remind me which bug.
That was the one where it was on the movie clip one, and while it started repeating it for the answers, the video was like getting juddery, and then it just went black, and then it would keep playing all the audio from all the answers, and you would see the subtitle pop up at the bottom. And then when it finally came to the point to pick and vote on the winner, the game just crashed.
I experienced in two different streams I saw issues with the visuals on sub the title, like the prompts not showing properly. Now, you were doing Beam, so you would have been Xbox.
Yeah.
I think that was the only issue where a console had playback issues. There was one Steam rig where, like, I think something about the video card in question had some incompatibility. I believe we patched that, but to be honest, yeah, that was the only console where I saw that issue.
So yeah, that's special. Because that's we fixed an issue with, because the turnarounds when you submit a game to the store, right, to be approved for the store, it's not like, you know, when you're submitting an app to the App Store or anything like that where it goes live, you know, goes through 2 days of review and then goes live. We're talking well over a month from when you submit the final build to when it's approved in many cases. And in our case, my Xbox just took longer to certify than Sony did. Other way around. That was the one. And we discovered while we were working on the Sony build, because we were working a little bit later, once Microsoft had, you know, Xbox and Nintendo had been submitted, we found a bug in the PS4 one that was really affecting it. And we went, oh, this bug actually isn't PS4 specific. It's just every other console seems to be more resilient to it. So I think what you encountered with the Xbox probably related to that bug, which is great because that we're going to be patching it with the cross-platform fixes in the near future anyways. So thanks for the QA.
I remember it happening during the stream and Brent's in the chat like, is this happening? What's going on? Is this a problem with the stream? What happened?
Yeah, it was hard for me to tell whether it was Beam or whether it was the console. But, I mean, you know, while obviously we are working constantly to find, track, and fix bugs on all platforms, the old adage of, like, you know, try turning it off and on again, like, there's an effectiveness. Yeah, I mean, like, in many cases, there is an effectiveness there. While, you know, our goal is to make it a foolproof, you know, watertight build of the game very soon. Sometimes, you know, if things happen at this phase, you know, it's worth trying.
Yeah. I mean, you're never going to get anything completely, you know, bug-proof these days with how complex things are.
That's for sure. I'm watching the servers obsessively, too, because, you know, as the game scales, it's like, oh, how will the servers perform? but so far, so good. Things are holding up. People are enjoying it. It's mostly working great.
Now, like, how does this technology work? Because it blows my mind that I log into a website on my phone and I'm playing a game either on my TV or even in the case of, like, if I'm watching someone on Twitch or on Beam, I'm playing a game on someone else's system half the world away. Like, how the fuck does technology do this? I don't get it.
A lot of research and a lot of, like, so we're actually using a lot of very new technologies, things that probably would have been a lot harder to implement a few years ago. HTML5 has progressed and now been adopted across most browsers, and with that came a standard called WebSockets. And without getting into crazy techno babble, WebSockets enable real-time communication between phones or anything with a browser and a fixed server. So previously you wouldn't be able to do that without an app or without something that's, you know, a companion piece of software. But now it just happens kind of automatically through the browser because we've leveraged this fairly new technology. I mean, part of the difficulty in building a game that's using something fairly new and not as battle-tested is that there isn't a lot of information or resources out there for it. So it was a lot of head-scratching, trying something, seeing how it worked, and then, you know, scrapping it, throwing it out, doing it again, debugging it, fixing out why this isn't scaling, why did this break? It was just a lot of trial and error, but... yeah, I'm super proud of what we were able to put together, a team of two programmers, and it's scaled up and it's held up quite nicely. And I don't know, I'm pretty excited about the whole thing.
Yeah. As much as we're talking about bugs, and obviously Joe, it's a bummer that, when you were trying to stream it, there was an issue,
but
you know what, well, that's the thing. One thing I do want to point out, if anybody's thinking of getting it, is, the number of games that have any issue whatsoever is in the extreme minority at this point, which it took a long time to get to the point where we could say that, you know, but, I can definitely confirm at this point that across all platforms, the game typically, it runs smoothly in a way where you sort of even forget that problems are possible. You know, it just runs and you're sort of more worried about winning or losing than, you know,
yeah, either done myself or I've been a part of, I haven't seen any kind of problems. That one crash that happened with us was basically the only issue I had with the game. And that's why you're like, you were asking for details and everything. And I'm like, I just chalk it up to shit happens. That's just how technology is. Sometimes things just crash. There's no reason that it crashed. It just crashed. So...
yeah, luckily we don't have any save files to corrupt, because in my gamer past, that's like always the worst, where you know, you lose hours of progress. With us, you know, you're working on a 20-minute game, so you know, you just start over. Not the end of the world.
Speaking of working on a game, Brent, how the fuck did you get into game development? Weren't you just the guy doing like songs a couple of years ago? What changed?
That is a fair question. I think the truth is that I had been conceiving different ideas for games for a while without in any way being a dev, but Julian actually for years would be my resource to, like, I'd pitch him an idea at a convention and he'd go, okay, but that would cost $5 million and you've never made a game. And I'd be like, okay. But like when I pitched Julian this one, you know, like particularly with this visual prototype that I made in Final Cut that just sort of showed what it would look like to play it, there was a fairly immediate like, oh, I get it. We could make this. We could actually make this. So it seems more overnight, I think, to the average Brennelfloss viewer. But it had been on my mind for a while. And not just game development, but also trying to find a way to branch out and not, you know, I feel like if you do YouTube and you've got a specific character and a specific brand, there comes a point where you can choose to branch out or where you're telling people, this is all I'm ever going to do. This is all you should ever expect from me. So, you know, this happens to be, the biggest branch out in my career thus far. But it not only did I want to make games, but also I was kind of poking around for some way to just do something new and stretch some new muscles. And so, you know, that said, it is still the only game I've other than being like a writer on like an app once, this is the only game I've gotten into the nuts and bolts of like the rules, the game theory, the user experience, you know, stuff like that. And I don't know. I mean, like the short version is, I think it was easy for a lot of people to think that all I really do is add lyrics to video game music, but that came out of a love for games that also made me want to make them as well. So hopefully this won't be the last.
Hope not, because I'm having a blast with this game. You mentioned that you've proposed a handful of ideas over the years. How long have you guys known each other?
7 years. It would have been 2010. I was trying to get Tommy Tallarico's ear to be part of Video Games Live. Julian tweeted me, and then I ended up in Toronto, where Julian lives, a little while after that. We hung out at the Smiling Buddha Bar, which is where the Smiling Buddha Games name comes from.
Learning things.
Yeah, just kind of became like buddies that see each other at conventions. And, you know, it's a good way to keep in touch. And that was 2010. So pretty much at least two or three times a year ever since then, we would end up at the same convention, have a drink and chat.
So have you guys just been doing everything like online working together?
Funny you should ask. Almost all of it up until the Kickstarter was that. I spent a month in Toronto in late 2015, just kind of like trying to be there to focus on the game and, you know, getting early prompts together. And just I felt like being there physically made it more urgent. I woke up every day being reminded that I wanted to do this project and that I was there for it. But once we funded the game via Kickstarter, I essentially moved to Toronto. I put all my stuff in storage in the States, but I like took two bags up there and like I bounced around Airbnbs, sometimes stayed with Julian, sometimes stayed with friends. But you know, I really wanted us to be able to play it in the same room, test it out in the same room, so that we weren't constantly reporting kind of secondhand knowledge to each other. Because, you know, when you see it in the same room, you can look at each other and go, oh, we got to fix that. It's a whole different deal to email a paragraph about that experience and hope that it translates. So I was basically an honorary Canadian up there for for what ended up being almost half of 2016.
Nice.
Yeah, and it made it easier too because our most of our dev team or the rest of our dev team are all here in Toronto, so you know, we could have full team meetings, go over the build, look at what's changed, what needs to change. It made it just so much easier than like, oh, let's get a Skype going, which, you know, works, but there's something about that in-person team meeting and team development that it's really hard to reproduce.
Yeah, for me, the thing that I think most of all made me want to go up there was my experience working on musical theater pieces, because I have attempted to collaborate on musical theater pieces via the internet, and it's hard and it's slow. And if you're trying to try something out live, if the entire team creating whatever piece you're doing, if they're not there to see a reading or even just a read through, then they're not having the same in-room experience with a medium that is very much about the people in the same room with you. You got to be breathing the same air and hearing their voice reverberate. You know, I feel like our game is actually, it's a comedy show that tricks you into thinking it's a comedy game. It's a comedy show starring you. but it's, and while it's actually a blast to play on streams, there is something unique about the experience of being in the room in real time with each other gathered on the same couch around the same TV.
Yeah, and for sure. Next time I actually throw or attend a party, I definitely want to play this. Unfortunately, I'm old and lonely, so my only option right now is to do it via stream, but it is just so stupidly fun to see some of the answers that pop up during these games.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, I will say, I thought I'd seen all of them. I thought I'd seen every possible answer, but it's a testament to the prompts that in many cases we were lucky to find, but that the good prompts, there could be 1,000 answers and you keep playing and you'll see something you've never seen before. So it's been pretty fun seeing what people, you know, total strangers on Twitch and Beam come up with.
Is there stuff that you didn't write that you've seen in the game after the fact? And you're like, who the fuck wrote? We wrote that? Who wrote that?
Yes. So, okay. So I wrote, I think something like 1,000 of the house answers in the span of like a week. Sometimes you just get, a little manic and a little creative and suddenly you're like, you haven't moved out of, you know, the same chair for like the whole day. And so the thing is that while I can usually just smell that I wrote a house answer, when so many of them, you know, you can almost get into like a weird, like right brain hypnotic state when you do that much right in a row. Add to that the fact that, you know, occasionally I'd have a few drinks and then be like, you know what, I'm not ready for bed. I'm going to write some house answers. So I think that the answer to your question from my perspective is it's not so much that I don't know who wrote one of our answers. It's more like being surprised that I wrote something because I've ended up voting for it. But going, oh, I guess I did write that. Okay, well, you don't remember them all, I guess, because there's like 3,500 or so house answers in the game at this point. Good
Lord. That's a lot.
Yeah, and to be fair, I did write most of them, but we have a really awesome team of staff writers, mostly women, actually, just people that are really talented and funny, who we tried to get different perspectives. We have people of color, women, people that are all up and down the LGBTQ spectrum, just people that like would naturally have a different perspective from me, straight white guy, and therefore what they would write would blend in a way that that would actually end up making the house answers trickier and sneakier, because they're not all the same comedic voice.
Nice. Is there anything that you wrote, because the game is a T-rated game, so it's not like super obscene, is there anything that you're surprised you got into the game that skirted by with a teen rating?
I think because of the level of scrutiny that we had to sort of start looking at it with when we needed to rate it, or when we needed to submit it for the ESRB, and also PEGI, which is the European version of the ESRB. I don't think there's anything at this phase I'm surprised about. I actually had our top contributing staff writer, Rachel Stein, she had the thankless task of like combing the entire spreadsheet to look for anything that like I just, you know, might have absentmindedly put in there or taken a risk and put in there that she would have been like, well, are you sure about this? Are you sure you want to piss these people off? You know, that kind of thing.
I don't think the word cunt is going to fly in a T-rated game.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that we, as a trade secret, we probably shouldn't tell you any particular phrases that aren't in the game, because that would give you hints as to the house answers. But I will tell you, we found ways to cleverly suggest a lot of things that we couldn't necessarily put in kind of a full-out way.
You got to give me one example. When you tease that...
I'll give you a fun example. I'm actually just searching for this right now. Peggy gave us a really funny response to one of our house answers, and I need to see if I can find it.
I know what it is. If you want,
yeah,
that'd be talking about it. So basically, it was the prompt was make up a last name that would be a deal breaker for you, or a relationship deal breaker for you. And the name is like spelled phonetically, but it's Fukenkunt. And the thing is, it's not a bad word. It's K-O-O-N-T, Fukenkunt. And like, you know, kind of a Scandinavian or something. But Peggy caught it. And they were like, you know, this sounds... What? How do they word it, Julian? Their response?
In one case, a word is used which, when said aloud, sounds like a sexual expletive.
Yeah. So like... That's an example of us like trying to acknowledge almost any form of vulgarity. But, you know, it's a tricky thing because like you want to create a space where people feel like they could say anything. But also you don't want to like necessarily lead a horse to water when it comes to things that, you know, are a certain type of insensitive or a certain type of just being an asshole. So like that was a delicate balance, and we feel like we've achieved a really nice variety where you're never quite sure which one's the decoy, while, you know, secretly we do have certain things that we didn't do full out.
Yeah, and I think bringing in those outside voices helped us avoid the Cards Against Humanity problem of, you know, they made a game in their 20s in college, and then a few years later they kind of regret some of the content that they put in the game, because it's a little tone deaf now and it's very much something that a 23-year-old will come up with, you know? So we wanted to avoid having any content in the game that, like, in 5 years we look back and went, ooh, we put that in there?
Yeah, the culture today is just so ever-changing and changing so quickly that things you may have been comfortable saying, you know, 2-3 years ago, you look at now and you're like, I don't think I could get away with that anymore.
Yeah, well, and one of the big revelations of testing the hell out of this game, and especially seeing strangers play it in the beta phase and post-launch, has been this realization of, like, it's never black and white. There are always... Everybody's offended by something, and everybody will push the envelope on a certain topic. And while we may have our own ideological ideas about which ones we'd really prefer people not to do, you know, we just, our goal was basically to never lead that horse to water, never set up a situation that's inviting people to be a certain kind of asshole, and just try to keep it as fun and open as possible.
You want to be a lovable asshole, not a horrible, mean asshole.
That's my whole brand. You nailed it. Yep, that's it.
It's the type of asshole.
Yes.
Not the brand. I don't know. Oh, man. I know the game has a family filter in there. Does that affect any of the house answers, or are there any questions or prompts that are eliminated when you have that family mode on, or is it basically, does that only take care of people submitting questions or solutions and answers?
Well, it's actually the opposite. We realized early on, just from growing up on the internet, trying to censor the player answers is a losing game. They'll always find some way if they just insist on making a certain kind of joke. And so it's like, we kind of looked at it like Monopoly. Like, if somebody's being a jerk playing Monopoly, well, they're going to have to face the consequences of being a jerk. And that guided us in quite a few decisions. But family mode actually just, it removes, the best way, I think, to put it is it makes the game much better for if you were going to gather around and play it with your extended family at Thanksgiving. You've got conservative Uncle Rufus and easily shocked Grandma and maybe a couple kids running around. And so it makes it where if there's dirtiness or suggestiveness, it's not going to be our fault. It's going to, you know, so we take out all irreverent religious references, anything political, certainly anything that sort of sets you up for vulgarity. Like, we have a prompt that's, is that a pistol in your pocket or blank? We just take that right out of family mode, because now you don't have to make a dick joke. Now, if you make a dick joke randomly on some other prompt that doesn't set you up for it, well, okay. I mean, we're not going to stop you there. That's you and what you want to do around whoever. It sort of becomes, we you know, it's always answer at your discretion. We just kind of make it not our fault with family mode.
Yeah. And we do filter out controversial house answers as well. Things that might be, you know, you're not going to find a bukkake house answer when you're playing with your family or whatever.
Right.
Right.
Will that, the family mode, will that censor any answers that people submit? Like the one that the dude's head is a potato. If someone writes in the answer, holy shit, this dude's a fucking potato, is it going to, like, censor the words?
No. Nope,
asterisks?
Nope.
Because, again, if we did that, somebody would put shite. And if we did that, somebody would put shit with two T's. And if we did that, you know what I mean? Like, they could always find some way. So we just sort of do our part. And if you're turning on family mode, we assume you're motivated to, like, keep it to a certain, you know, PG or G rating. But again, the extra, it would be like tons and tons of extra work to ultimately never quite be able to, you know, I mean, when you look at things like on Twitter, people are filtering out words, and I understand why, but then jerks on Twitter can, like, then make a new euphemism and start calling a certain group of people a different harmless word. So you can never quite keep up with that dragon, and it's really not the point of the game to, like, censor anyone, because, again, everyone's offended by something, and the spectrum of what that can be is so wide. We're just making an open platform for people to make jokes.
Yeah.
And we just make sure that we're not putting you in an awkward situation if you're showing your grandma and your 10-year-old and suddenly there's a joke that's like, looking to spice up the bedroom? Have you tried blank? Like, we take that one out. And all house answers that would also be suggestive, adult, or otherwise controversial.
And then grandma writes in, fisting.
Oh, man, I got to tell you, my 70-something-year-old Aunt Mary surprised me when we played. She was like, she didn't want to write answers, but she would vote. So I would, like, I would like, I was playing on a team with her, and I was like, which one should we vote for? And she goes, I like the dick one. it's funny, you know, what I didn't expect from this game is how it can help you bond with older family members that you didn't know that they had such a raunchy sense of humor. It's been a real treat to, like, play with people in an older generation and be like, wow, it's such a facade, this idea of the grandmotherly, grandfatherly, you know, like, oh, they'd be so disappointed. But when you're an adult and they're an adult, man, you can really
gloves
have fun.
Are off, man.
Absolutely.
They're just as fucking filthy as us. They just try to hide it when we're kids.
Yeah.
As soon as we leave, as soon as the kids go home, grandparents are like, good thing those little fuckers are out of here.
Just light up a doob and just
let's get fucked up. So, speaking of being vulgar, have you guys considered going the opposite way and just going all out M-rated?
We talked about the possibility of like a DLC pack that would be like the late night secret stash. but you know, like at a certain point, we may well do that. But in the meantime, if you're playing with a group that's particularly foul mouthed, then statistically, almost every answer you're going to see is going to have that in it. So, you know, it's if we get to the point where we're just doing so well with the game that we can kind of make all different flavors of DLC, it could happen, but I don't know that it's on the docket per se. Julian, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, we picked a T rating event, like, you know, after giving it a lot of thought, mostly because audience limitation, right? With an M-rated game, we're losing out on people who might be dissuaded from buying it, who wanted to play it with their teenage kids or something like that, right? So we want to make this accessible, you know, as accessible as possible, and also not send a message that, like, this is the raunch show starring raunch, because it's not really... The spirit of the game is be you. Let your humor shine. And if you're a raunch comedian, or if that's where your humor lies, then it'll come out and it'll enable you. But we didn't want to force players to be a certain way. Some people are just like, some people are not, like, clean humor, and they're really good. Like, some people are just bad pun machines, you know, and they have a great time playing the game because it's not forcing another style of humor onto them. So yeah, I mean, I totally think that having some kind of pack could work. We have to just figure out what the logistics of a separate rated DLC pack would be. The ratings boards are so complex sometimes about what they allow you to do within a certain product that's already been rated.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's actually so much like a inside baseball that goes on when the gamers just never see, like, the entire ratings process. I mean, mostly because we're not allowed to talk about details. We sign non-disclosure acts and things like that. But yeah, so much of the process is just so invisible, but they're pretty scrutinous.
I understand. You mentioned DLC. Is that something you guys are actively working on? Or is it wait and see and make sure the game takes off first?
Well, I think, and I hope this isn't telling tales out of school or giving away too much, but basically we're doing both of those things. I've created sort of a prototype. What am I trying to say? I've created enough prompts for some future DLC games potentially that if we decide to make DLC, we've got kind of a starter pack. We've got our Charmander ready to go to try those out. But
we were talking about it for like towards the end of development, we were thinking like, well, how can we expand this game if it's successful enough? Cause you know, at the end of the day, we're independent devs. So we just don't have the war chest to crank out content, that for a game that people aren't buying. Right.
Yeah.
So, a lot of it, there's I think the act of us pulling the trigger on DLC is a bit of a wait and see, but we're working on the foundations and the groundwork so that if and listening to feedback too, because, you know, we can plan a lot of things, but we're learning so much about the game and the way people are playing it by watching streams now that it might influence our designs and our decision making for what additional content might look like.
Absolutely.
Like, what have you learned so far? People are filthy.
Well, you know what's funny? I think that there are different types of hosts when you play this game, like the kind of person that's going to, you know, that's going to pull the game out in their friend group. And sometimes it's somebody who's not very funny, but they love laughing and they know their friends are funny. Sometimes it's the class clown who really wants to, like, you know, finally get recognition and win competitively. What I've found that's fascinating is that on average, and this is anecdotal, but on average, the average Twitch host is not necessarily like going to win every time, even though you'd think, oh, a Twitch host is like a big personality, they're good at multitasking. But it's great to see that so often players in the chat will be the ones to really clean up. And, you know, I would have assumed a lot of times that the person who, you know, the creative host type who's putting on the stream would often be the funniest, but it's not the case. How that would inform DLC, I don't know, but that is one small lesson I've taken from just the last week of watching streams.
Yeah, and one thing that I've taken just from reading the Steam reviews, looking at discussions, and watching streams is that, like, house answers are pretty divisive. I think that without them, the game would not be remotely as strategic, and it wouldn't be nearly as fun. But learning that, like, some people just loathe them with a burning passion, just not the content, but they hate falling for them. But, I think the general advice we've had is the way to not fall for a house answer is to just play the game a bit more and learn what, you know, not memorize the answers, but learn what kind of sounds like the game and what doesn't, and also write your own in-jokes or references that you and your friends can get. So that way you know, like, okay, that's definitely not a house answer because it mentions something that we all know. And, you know, voting strategically becomes a part of the strategy.
See, I love the addition of house answers because it's that wild card. It's like when you play Cards Against Humanity and what the hell do they call the... when you just have a random card... Rando
Card Rizian.
Yeah. Rando Card Rizian. It's that option. I kind of wish that you guys implemented the house answer had its own hidden score that you would see at the end of the game.
Oh, that's interesting. I think that the what would dissuade me from actually implementing that is the fact that when there are, you know, 3,500 house answers, and let's say on average you're going to see 12 of those in any given game with 7 rounds and 9 prompts, right? Well, what that means is that that tiny sliver, let's say those 12 out of 3,500, can really tell a story that's very specific, like can really give you an idea of what the people writing the house answers were like. And then you play a game again, and there's 12 others that can tell an entirely different story just based on the random, the random pick of which ones you're going to get. So that said, though, I feel like the inclusion of house answers, despite the fact that some players are annoyed at that they keep voting for them, what makes me happy about it is that the whole point of house answers is working. House answers are ultimately part of there's a twofold reason for them. Number one, they allow for the house decoy system so that people who are anxious about being funny always have an escape hatch, so they never have to be anxious because there's always a way out. But also, the game, you know, we could optimize to make the game more of a game of pure skill, like more fair per se, but the addition of house answers makes the game actually funnier and allows for people that maybe aren't hilarious to, in the chaos of trying not to vote for the house answer, end up getting more votes. So it's all kind of like, as much as people might think, oh, I'm annoyed at the house answers, I feel like that's kind of like, oh, I'm annoyed at this difficult boss. You know, like we've added an element of strategy that makes it addictive, makes it harder to be competitive, and you never quite know what's going to happen. But really, it's all in the service of making it where people that play this game are going to laugh harder and more often because of the addition of house answers.
Yeah, I think if you're annoyed at the house answers, they're doing their job.
Right.
And the way we designed this game, like, it's similar to Cards Against Humanity in that how many people actually play Cards Against Humanity for competitive reasons? You know, when you bust out cards at a party, there's a lot of, you know, posturing and, you know, and people saying, oh, I'm totally going to kick your ass. But there's very little, you know, I am desperate to win this Cards Against Humanity game, and I will do it at all costs. I need
right.
I will fucking kill you.
You know, we look at Use Your Words like a game show where, yeah, you know, on actual game shows, there's always an element of randomness. Like, it's never pure skill that wins you a game show, because you can't. The system is working against you, actively trying to keep you from winning, right?
Right.
And so for us, that's the attitude I think we have, that it's more of a game show. It's, if you win and you're good at it, that's awesome. But there's really no, like, there's very little optimization strategies that you can do, like take the optimal path to win at Use Your Words. Never really the intention anyways.
Speed run Use Your Words.
Oh man, I'd love to see that. I mean, actually, I'd love to watch a tournament, but I think it would end up having the same kind of randomness as if you were going to do rock, paper, scissors. Like, there are lots of mind games, but at a certain point, I think that while it would be fun academically, I think that a tournament would almost make it less fun, because everyone's so in their head about the strategy. Would they be able to, like, keep the fun of just, like, we're all here to laugh and have a good time, you know?
I don't know. Part of me thinks, like, the game isn't about who wins. I mean, it's cool when you win, or it sucks when you lose, but it's more about the journey there and the laughs on the way. So I think if anyone out there is, like, legitimately getting annoyed and, like, oh, I hate these house answers, they shouldn't be there at all, they're ruining my win streak, fuck them, really. Just,
that's fun. Well,
it's a fucking game.
I will not publicly disagree with you, sir.
Yeah, I don't know. I love the house answers. I love the decoys. Every time I fall for one, my initial instinct is, God damn it, not again. And I laugh, because it's hilarious that I got called out by the computer. Plus, it shows how funny you assholes are.
Well, you know, one thing I think that was really fun was, like, sorry, Julian, were you
saying on that train of thought before we move on, there's a fun bug that was thing that started as a bug and actually just made it into the game. We decided to ship with it. So we have a feature that if you get a sweep, if every player votes for your answer, Ed Kelly, our announcer, will come in and just say, congratulations. We forgot to turn that off for the house answer. So if the house answer gets a full sweep, he'll come in and say, congratulations. But like, like, should we remove that? No, that's just salt. That is just like the wound is open. Salt is being shaken right into the gaping wound.
Oh, that is amazing.
That's pretty great. And by that sweep, we mean in a 5 or 6 player game. Because a sweep when you're playing with 3 is like not quite as impressive. But 5 or 6 player game. I don't think the voice actor Ed Kelly, I don't think he had any idea that they would be used that way. It's just like, it's a heartfelt congratulations, which makes it just so good.
Now I want that to happen in a game that I'm playing, just to see that. I think the most points I've seen someone get has been 4 out of the 6.
Interesting.
And I think that one, to this day, I think it's my favorite answer, is the name a car that you would not buy. Brent, you might have been there when this happened, but the answer someone gave was Jesus fucking Chrysler.
Yes, I remember. And you know what? I think that, like, in my experience, sweeps happen more when everyone's in the same room physically, because it's kind of like an applause-o-meter. You know the one that killed. But on a Twitch chat or a live stream, unless you've got so many people in the chat, I mean, even then there's lag on most streams, so you can't tell what they're LOLing or LULing about. But in the same room, you really know when one just knocked it out of the park and you have to vote for it. So in my experience, the sweeps are more common when you're all together.
But man, that answer, the Jesus fucking Chrysler.
That was good. That was I don't know that I would have written that as a house answer, but I would be proud to have written it as an answer in any game. That's punny, but also dirty. Oh, it's just real good.
That one, I even said, like, during the stream, I'm like, please vote for that one. Like, I don't care what else pops up. That one was just amazing.
Yeah.
And that's the one that ended up winning the game, because it got 8,000 points.
Yeah, well, anything, I mean, that's what, you know, anything in Survey Says really, you know, if you can get a sweep in Survey Says, you're likely to, if nothing else, really get up the ladder, if not win. Actually, when we first tried Survey Says, which, you know, fun fact, Survey Says is the youngest of our four minigames, it sort of replaced one called Hashtaggery, which was a Twitter hashtag game sort of minigame. We decided to just make something a little more straightforward, since not everybody immediately knows how Twitter hashtag games work. So that said, Survey Says started out tripling the point values, and it would just be like brutal when somebody would have even, you know, two or three votes. They would just rocket from like last to first, and it was almost like, it really made you feel like nothing else mattered except for those three answers. So we balanced that out and doubled the points, but it is still dramatic. It was your
blue shell.
Exactly. We feel like it's closer to, it's fair now, or fairer, in a way that doesn't piss players off. Because, you know, I don't know, Julian's shipped a lot of games, but a big lesson for me on this one was knowing the difference between players complaining because they're frustrated at the challenge and players complaining because you've actually sort of crossed some sort of line. Originally, House Answers and House... let me make sure I get this right. Originally, House Answers, if you voted for one, you'd lose 500 points, which really hurt. If you were one of those people that always voted for the House Answer, you could like end up with a severely negative score pretty quickly. Yeah. And I would just be like, well, you better start voting strategically. But then I realized after like weeks of hearing that, like, oh, well, maybe this is like actually less fun. And that's one of the hardest things, you know, in my very, very short game dev experience. But the hardest things to know is like, when is the complaint a matter of healthy frustration? And when is it really addressing a problem that like makes people like your game less? It's a very delicate balance.
And anyone who's worked with like clients before, you know, if you're in the design field or anything, you know, where you're working with someone, it's almost never what the client says they want is almost never what they actually want. And so oftentimes you have to listen to people's feedback and really read between the lines. Like when they say, I hate House Answers, what does that actually mean? When they say like, oh my gosh, you know, I wish this was easier. Well, is it because is it that your game is too difficult, or is it there's a system they don't particularly like, or like there's all these kinds of things like what, and finding out what people actually mean instead of what they're saying is a very difficult task.
Yeah.
You mentioned Hashtaggery. Are there any other games that didn't make the cut that you guys are working on?
Okay. So, well, I'm going to answer that two ways. So in early 2015, I had a lot to drink, and I don't know if this ever happens to you, but I woke up like weirdly like a piece of toast popping out of the toaster at like 3 a.m. And I'd been like thinking about making this game, but it all just kind of, I had a eureka and like middle of the night just started typing. At that time, I did conceive of a game that basically was all about puns and plays on words. But the thing is, not everybody's punny. And so before I ever got to the point where I was showing creating a visual prototype, I cut that because even then I think I wanted to make a game that anyone could try and be good at, and it wouldn't be like, oh, you have to be especially witty for this one part, because lots of people are wittier than they think, and then there's people that like aren't terribly witty that can still do well at this game. And that's because it's you know, we focused on accessibility. But other than that, I don't know. I mean, we've had various sometimes pie in the sky ideas for games that could exist, but I'm not sure, because they all could potentially be things we do in the future, I don't necessarily want to announce now and have that Half-Life 3 confirmed moment that we have to later on apologize that we didn't do. You know, on that note, one of the exciting things about making DLC is it's kind of a final boss for us, because we had 2 years to figure out what worked with 1.0. If we decide to pull the trigger on DLC, we're going to be trying to, you know, rail it out exponentially in less time. I think
you won't have 2 years to do that.
Right. And while I wouldn't put a number on it now, it would have to be much faster. So it's like we're not going to be able to have the same amount of creative distance and incubation time. We're basically going to have to take everything we learned with 1.0 and now apply it to slightly different, unique, you know, forms of the game. So it's exciting in that way, but it's also kind of like we really are going to have to, you know, just kind of use every bit of the buffalo that we got so far.
I will say that there was a game that we were conceiving, like one of the, you know, we talked about we have some ideas for DLC. We were working on an additional one that we thought we'd be able to try and make it into the final product, but we just, like, again, going back to killing your babies, or at least refining them, we didn't want to ship something with the game that we knew couldn't be the best that it was. And just because, you know, I think we've seen people seem to be very happy with the totality of the experience, but the, you know, one of the number one requests is, oh, I'd love more minigames. And we really would have loved to have more in there as well, but making it and making them it good are two different things. We really wanted to make each minigame stand out and, like, have zero, like, little to few duds, you know, in any way, shape, or form in terms of content.
You didn't want to have more shit in there just to have more shit in there.
Exactly.
And the thing about this kind of game is it's actually very different from other games I've worked on in that the challenge, once we get past the systems stuff, like the networking and all the hard stuff, implementing a new game isn't so much challenging on the technical side as it is on the content side, right? Like, and it's so difficult to, especially when you get lost in your own content. Like, is this good? I don't know. I have no perspective on it. Like, you know, at this point, I've played it 10 times and I think it's funny, but how does it, you know, how do other people find it? So there's a lot of trial and error.
Makes sense. Do you think any future game ideas, is that something that might happen with DLC, or would you rather save that for a potential sequel?
You know, obviously the elephant in the room is that Jackbox is doing things similarly in that they use the phone thing, right?
Yeah.
And that was obviously an influence. You know, they announced Quiplash, which is their comedy game, a few weeks after we had sort of decided on a concept. So what I'm bringing that up to say, they have done the sequel thing. It's an interesting choice. To me, I feel like Jackbox is really good at, like, trying a ton of different things and seeing what sticks. For me, I feel like we've given it this title, Use Your Words. And there are so many different ways in which players can literally use their words, type things in to be funny. I think it makes more sense, at least in the short term, to make a richer experience with the first game we have with DLC rather than planning a sequel, which, you know, I mean, we're still really just barely getting started on the post-launch of the first one, you know. Yeah. So I think that neither of us are ready to confirm or deny, but I would say way before we ever talk potential sequels, the idea of enriching and elaborating on the experience that currently is there is more of a thing we're hoping to do.
Are you guys? I'm assuming you guys are getting a lot of comparisons to Jackbox.
I mean, it's literally the other people, and generally favorably. I'd say almost entirely favorably. It's like, if you're a fan of party games, digital party games, there really aren't many options for you. I mean, when we got started on this project, I was incredibly surprised that we were the only other people trying to do this phone interface style party game other than Jackbox, right? Because the first one had been out for, I think, a couple of years or a year and a half by that point. And it's like, wow, how are we the only ones? I mean, I realized, because it's very difficult, and that's probably why it's keeping a lot of people out, especially, you know, especially indies, because a lot of indies come at it from, are generally creators on an artistic side or on a design side. Very few indie developers kind of start from a technical perspective. And this is one of those games that really just requires a lot of technical rigor to really figure out how you're an architect at all. So I guess that's all possibly been an impediment too. But yeah, so I mean, like, the comparison is inevitable. because there is only one player. It is the, not to put us in the same category, but it is the Sonic to the Mario. You know, you're going to play one, and you're going to look at the other and go, well, that's just kind of like Mario, or that's just kind of like Sonic. Because at the time, there really weren't hundreds of platformers. It was just the two big ones, right?
Yeah, but, you know, I found that, I mean, all my training is really centers around comedy and musical theater. And one of the great tools in trying to pitch an idea, particularly of musical theater, is A meets B. This also goes along with film, TV, and games. I didn't know how much it, you know, went along with games. But like the idea of, okay, here's thing you know mixed with other thing. And so for me, the ability, when people really want a shorthand of what the game is about, if I say, well, okay, it's kind of like Jackbox because you use your phone, but, and you know, that's a good shorthand. But again, the only reason we can say that is because there's not this genre. Like, imagine if like 10 other similarly interfaced games popped up, then they'd probably start, they'd give them some initials, like MMORPG eventually became a genre. And maybe this would be like smart, you know, or web-enabled device party game, you know, like who knows what they'd call it. But, you know, to Julian's point, when there's really only two, you do get compared. But I will say, and this is a bit of a bragging note, but it is 100% true, I have yet to see somebody in a stream say, you know, get rid of this, let's play Jackbox. I think that the combination of it being a fresh take on the idea, and also, frankly, I think that all respect to Jackbox, I think that we have a little bit more comedy chops and rigor in the way that we approach a comedy game. You know, it's almost entirely been favorable.
Yeah. Plus, there's the fact that unlike the Jackbox party packs, you have a very defined game of what you're doing instead of having five different games. And let's be honest, as much as I love Jackbox, You Don't Know Jack, Quiplash, those party packs are usually hit and miss. There's, you know, one amazing game, two pretty good games. The fourth one is like, it's okay once in a while. And then there's usually one that just sucks.
Well, you said it, not me. But again,
that's,
like,
that's just my experience with the three party packs that they've done. There's just, it's not always five winners.
I think honestly, we had the benefit of seeing that beforehand and seeing that if we took an approach that was much more like, let's only keep what works. And if that ends up being a smaller game, that's fine. Let's do one main thing really well, rather than try a bunch of things and see where the cards fall. And I think that helped us not only just in making a great game, but also I think that distinguishes us right off the bat.
Yeah, you don't want to, I guess it's one of those things where you don't want to be a jack of all trades. In this kind of scenario, you would rather be good at the one thing that you're doing.
Right, well, because, you know, at a certain point you realize your game cannot be all things to all people. You can just make the best thing you can make, and we, you know, we just had a very, if it doesn't work, if it doesn't delight the player, throw it out. And that guided us, and I think created, I mean, one of the main ways you see that is that, you know, you turn on a Jackbox party pack and it says, which of our things do you want to try? And even though, you know, early on we did consider letting players pick which minigame they liked, once we started playing it in the order that you currently play it, it was like, oh, this is like a little experience. This is like a little, like when you play Cranium and you have to, everybody goes down the same board and is trying to get to the end of the same thing. It's a little journey. And so it's like, theirs is a bit more nonlinear. We're more of a rail shooter. But if it's all good and all solid, the player doesn't really notice that they don't have, you know, ultimate choice. And actually what they're doing is experiencing something we've curated to be like, to have the right pacing, to have the right rhythm, to feel like a fun party game that doesn't take too long. At the end of it, you can play another if you feel like it, or if you just wanted to, you know, do a quick 20-30 minutes, you're done.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it, though. What do you think the overall reception has been so far? I'm going to guess that people are digging it.
Overwhelmingly positive, and I'm not just quoting our Steam reviews. I mean, honestly, you know, like I'm my own worst critic, and you know, there are always your fringe people that have tons of ideas for bells and whistles that would only help them. Or that would, you know, if somebody's got like 90 seconds of lag because they're in Moldova, it's like, okay, well, I'm sure there's some way to fix that, but you're, you know, but that said, I've been totally heartened by the fact that people like the game. I've gotten to sit there and lurk while somebody plays it for the first time on a stream. And it's the hardest thing for me not to like give them training wheels and tell them how to do it. But when I back off and don't say anything, they figure it out. They like it. And there's like often, you know, almost to a person, once they see the answers for subtitle, they see the subtitles playing that everybody wrote, a light bulb clicks on, they get it, and they go, oh, I like this game, or oh, I love this game, this is a good game. I've thought of actually compiling clips of those moments to like make a little montage, because they dig it. And the biggest compliment is when they finished a party match, they could do anything they want to do, it's a stream or a party or whatever, where you have all kinds of options, and they say,
let's do it again. Play again.
yeah, and I gotta tell you, there was a time with the early prototype where that wasn't always the case. And part of that was that I think I had a breathless, crazy energy about showing people, like, you know, as a baby dev, very insecure about everything. But now when you can't even communicate with them, like in a subscriber-only stream or something, and they just come up with that on their own, it's so satisfying because to them it's a casual choice. Like, yeah, let's try it again. And to me as a dev, it's like it took so much work behind the scenes, both tech and creative, to make it a game that people would just be like, yeah, let's give it another shot.
Nice. Have you surprised anybody by just randomly showing up in their game? Like you're hanging out in the stream, kind of lurking, not making yourself known, and a new game starts up and you're like, you know what, I'm going to sneak into this one. And then they're just watching and the name ticket shows up of Brental Floss. Has anyone just been like, oh my God?
Usually it's not the game ticket, because that could be anyone. It's the fact that my Twitch name is Brental Floss. So sometimes, I mean, occasionally, you know, somebody in the chat will ask a question like, why are my spectator votes not showing up on the screen? And so after half an hour of just lurking silently, I'll be like, oh, well, this is why, and they'll be at the end of the game. And then the host sometimes will be like, wait, hold the phone, you know, like, but occasionally they'll be very skeptical. They'll be like, yeah, I think I've heard the name Brental Floss, but I don't think this is the Brental Floss. So let's just, you know, I mean, it's fun to, you know, depending on what people know, if someone in the chat knows that I'm a dev on the game and they notice that I'm there, you know, it can be nice to kind of, you know, make players of the game, early adopters, feel special because like I showed up. If they're Brental Floss fans, which not everybody is, totally cool, totally, totally aware of that. But the short answer is, yeah, I've had a lot of fun popping in and like, you know, playing a game with other players and finding out just how many different types of groups there are. Because if I play with like my good friends from back home, a lot of times I'll score very, very well. But like, there are groups where the tone of the group is like not terribly mature or whatever, and I'll crack something off that I think's real funny, and they'll just scratch their heads. And that's part of the beauty of the game is like it wraps around the sort of average consensus sense of humor of any group. It sort of like magically pulls them all. You know, what's your sense of humor, and then tailors to that, because really your group is the star of the game. So yeah, it's been fun popping in, and I'm lurking more now because it's better for research and seeing how people react to it when they don't know I'm there. Because if they know I'm there and they're a fan or they're respectful of me being a dev, of course they're probably not going to say, yeah, this game sucks, you know. So like, it's nice to just not make myself known and see the natural responses. Again, almost always very positive, but
almost always. Have you ever been lurking in a stream and they're just like, this game's fucking stupid?
Nope. And honestly, like I again, both very hard on myself creatively and I feel like if there were something that made people kind of universally annoyed with the game or dislike the game, I think that you would have seen some kind of public response from us. Like, you know, you look at Mass Effect Andromeda, you know, the fact that like the company came out and just said, hey, we know that a lot of you aren't happy about this one bit. We're working on it. But as much as I am waiting to find out what is the point, what is the thing we can make better about this, it's often briefly people will be confused because they're used to the way Jackbox works, and then they realize this is different, and then you don't hear anything else about it because they're just, it's not unlike, you know, you go, oh, I was playing Mega Man, which is a side scroller, now I'm playing Mario, I can't shoot in this game, but it's not Mega Man, you know, like they kind of just, not that we're in that league, I'm just saying, as an analogy, but you know, it's that kind of thing. And occasionally people will, it's the same kind of things you see with any game where people will be annoyed that the room filled up with six people and they can't play as a main player. But to me, that's a compliment. They're annoyed that they can't play. That's great. So, you know, I'm keeping my eye on it, but I will tell you, even to my surprise and delight, I have really not seen comments that make me think, oh gosh, we've got to jump on this and fix it right away.
That's good. Always good to know that you didn't fuck anything up horrifically.
right.
I know one of the, on Reddit, someone was mentioning, hey, this game is out. Has anyone tried it? I was like, yeah, I was playing it before. I was lucky enough to have the dev come in and hang out. And I explained the game a bit, and they're like, why is it only six players? Like, that seems kind of dumb. Why isn't it like eight, like Jackbox?
So this was an internal, at one time struggle that now I completely see why we went the way we went, and I stand behind it. It really comes down to the subtitles. I basically went back and forth with Julian because I wanted eight, but some of the best subtitle clips are like 10 seconds long. And so if you see six answers and a house answer, you've got, and then also the little boop in between, you've got now 75 seconds of watching the answers. Now that's okay if they're funny, but then you're also going to watch 75 seconds of scoring, and that's just about the level of people's patience we found. If you added eight, now you're talking a minute and a half. If everybody votes for a different one, the scoring sequence, it's really just about pacing. You never want the player to sigh, and sort of like, it's just like musical theater.
Come on.
It's just like musical theater or a comedy show. If somebody's sighing, it's not what you did right then. It started minutes before. So at this point, the six player thing was a matter of keeping the pace tight. And also, if somebody's angry that they didn't get in this last game, they'll probably want in next game, which means they're playing another game. So,
or they can hang out in the viewers and vote that way and get the awards at the end.
Right, exactly.
Which I love that. I love seeing the like the filthiest answer at the end.
Always a joy.
Yeah, you never want to have that Monty Python moment of get on with it already.
Exactly. And, you know, there were some subtitle prompts that were just a hair too long, and we cut them because, again, pacing. It's all about creating an experience that's predictable and also just feels slick without necessarily being, you know, manic and like it's not going to make you anxious where it's going too fast, but it's just, it's moving right along, and there's always something new to do right after this.
Yeah, I think the only additions I would personally like to see to the game, and not just in a content way, because, you know, everybody loves more content, I would love to see a way to kick someone, like if they're either like trolling people by not answering and making people wait the full like 70 seconds or whatever, or if they're just putting like grossly obscene answers that are just ruining everyone's time. I would love to see a way to boot someone, but I don't know if that's even possible.
No, it totally is. One of the things, I mean, we don't have a concrete plan or strategy around this, but the idea of having a host tool Or some additional website you can go to, like you know, wordsgame.lol/host, where if you are a streamer or if you're just, you know, hosting something global, you can say, okay, this person's being abusive, or this person is being, like, violating our standards for our particular stream, get rid of them. I think that would be pretty useful. We just got to figure out the best way of doing that in an organic manner.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we have included a feature that it does not get used often, but I have seen some streamers, they will handpick a team from people they know and trust, or people that haven't been being jerks. They will, you know, hide their screen and make a password in the settings menu, and then on Twitch, you know, there's the whisper function, which is like a direct message or a personal message. They can let only a select group know the password. Yeah. So that, I mean, it's not foolproof, but it's sort of like it fills that gap in the meantime if anyone listening has had this issue. And, you know, trolls are
they're a way of life.
they're a disease of the internet at large, and our game uses the internet. But in the short term, the password function can be helpful for that.
Yeah, it definitely helps with bigger streamers. But then you have schmucks like me who I just need people to join a game. So passwording, yeah, it would just make it so much worse. And then, yeah, the only other addition I would honestly love to see I seriously would love to see a random, like the random house answer score at the end of the game. Like, it doesn't have to be in like first to sixth place, but just like pop up on the side. Like, if they were playing, the house would have earned this, or just some way to see how the house would have scored.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about it. I think that's something we can, it's neat feedback, and we can definitely think about ways in which we could do that. The other thing we want to show is a bit more of an indication of what spectators are doing. Because right now you only find out at the very end of the game. And that's fine, but even just having a bit more indication that spectators are doing things and are there. So it's worth thinking about, especially as we need to discuss how to do that, how to solve that problem as well. It might be worth thinking all about showing the house's performance or something along those lines.
And just to see, just for the people who are pissed off that the house answers exist the way it is, that'll make them even happier. But, yeah, I know we've been chatting for a while. I don't want to take up all of your night. The game is available now on what? PlayStation, Xbox, and PC?
That's correct. PC and Mac. We have PlayStation 4 Europe took a little bit longer to get approved, but that's going to be out on the 18th. And then hopefully the Wii U versions, North America and Europe, will launch very soon in that period of time.
Are there any thoughts of a Switch version?
Oh, definitely thoughts.
Because that seems like, you know, the Switch advertised itself as you would bring it to bars and play in nightclubs.
Oh, yeah. We are definitely having conversations with Nintendo at the moment about that. They're just being very curative right now with how they're rolling things out for the Switch. So it's not as open a platform as the Wii U was and is. I think it's going to be for the benefit of the Switch, to be honest. So we're having a conversation, but we don't have any timelines or confirmations or anything yet.
No, I certainly hope it happens, because it seems like the perfect game to have. Like, you're just on a long bus ride or something. You're like, oh, motherfuckers, have I got an idea for you?
No, we feel the same way.
Oh, but yeah, fantastic game. I want to thank you both for coming on. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to talk about?
No. So does this podcast syndicate, like, or rather is it live and then going out immediately? Like, when are people going to hear it that didn't hear it live?
The episode should be up tomorrow night sometime.
Okay, well then I'll say this: people that are listening on the stream right now, we're gonna be 15% off on Steam for the next, I think, 20 or so hours. If you're listening to this you know, the post-stream version on Monday, you missed that, but still please buy the game, because it's great and it's very reasonably priced, so please do that.
You missed out, sucker.
$15, it's, you know, three lattes from Starbucks.
For what end up being up to, I think, 13 or 14 hours of non-repeating content.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so, you know.
Like, that is a lot of game there to play.
Yeah. But yeah, Joe, thank you so much for having us. It's really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the game and to chat with you. And hopefully we'll pop into more streams sometime soon.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds good. And yeah, let's do this again sometime. You guys were awesome to have on, and I can't wait for more.
Neither can we.
Oh, that was fun. Always good having awesome people on the show. Game is awesome. The chat was awesome. And yeah, you guys should pick it up. I do have a handful of quick reviews that we got to take care of. Going to be weird doing this without CJ or anyone in general, really, on. But shit's got to get done. The first game I need to talk about today is called Mortal Blitz, developed and published by Skonek Entertainment, and released April 4th on PlayStation VR for $19.99. Mortal Blitz is the new level of first-person action VR game based on Sony PlayStation VR. Mortal Blitz emphasizes not only the good original characteristics of gun shooting games, but also enhances many interactive elements of the game to deliver more immersive experience in the virtual reality. Sorry, English sometimes gets to me. This game plays a lot like a VR first-person Time Crisis style game, where everything, clearly you use the Move controllers. I believe you can also use actual controllers, like two actual PS4 controllers, but really, if you're playing a VR game, you're going to want to use the Move controllers. I found it best to play this standing up because, a lot like Time Crisis, there are some times where you need to get into cover. So while you're standing up, if a guy is shooting you, you can easily, like, you know, move to the side and duck down and hide behind a big box of, or a big stack of metal crates or something to protect yourself, pop up out of cover, shoot the guys, and just go on with what you got to do. The shooting in the game is really well done. I haven't had any kind of issues with the motion tracking not working well. The accuracy, the guns have laser sights, so it's fairly easy to have decent accuracy in shooting things. The guns, you have two pistols that are just your default weapons that have infinite ammo. They have 24 bullets in a clip, so you got to reload afterwards. When you want to use other stuff, though, you just hit one of the face buttons on the Move controller and the gun goes away. And then you can use the thumb button, the touch button, whatever the fuck the button is called. And it's like a telekinesis style button where if there's, you know, grenade laying around, you can use it on that and pull the grenade to you and then point and release the button and it throws it. Or you could pick up chairs or crates or whatever items are around to pick up and use as basically extra weapons. You might see special guns like rail guns or chain guns or whatever else sitting around that you can pick those up. And they're basically single use where the clip is gone and then you just shoot the gun away. It's really good. The gunplay is good. The visuals are fantastic. Fast paced, fast action. They have kind of like a finisher effect in the game where if you stun an enemy and they're kind of dazed, you can get rid of your gun and then do the telekinesis thing to lift them up in the air. And it's like a groggy kill where you just, you know, double action, blast shit out of them. Game is fun, though. It has a decently long campaign, a lot of missions to do in there, three different difficulty levels. If that's not enough for you, they also have a training mode, which is basically like a shooting gallery with another, I think, 50 stages there that you can go through. There's a lot of content in this game for the $20. And for the price, I think this is definitely a buy it if you've got a PlayStation VR. So Mortal Blitz, Skonek Entertainment. Thumbs up, buy that shit. Next game to talk about is called Snake Pass, developed and published by Sumo Digital. It released March 28th on Xbox One, PS4, Steam, and Nintendo Switch for $19.99. When the tranquility of Haven Tor is interrupted by a mysterious interloper, only the unlikeliest of heroes can save the day. Meet Noodle the Snake and his hyperactive best friend Doodle the Hummingbird, hummingbird, god damn it, who together must reunite the missing keystones with the magical gates that give Haven Tour its mythical power. We called in our friend Wood to join us with this one. Wood, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Did you enjoy Doodle the Hummingburger?
No. He was the hummingbird. Yeah, he was a little annoying.
So we actually were covering this game on the Xbox One on my end, and then you got to cover it on the Switch. So I'm eager to hear what your thoughts are and if there's any kind of major differences between the two.
As far as I know, I don't think there's any actual major differences. It is still Christ. The snake's name is Noodle. Are you kidding me? Like, the guys don't know, like, there's this, the internet, right, is anytime there's an adorable snake, which I never thought I'd say those freaking words, they're like, snake owners refer to their snakes as noodles.
Yep.
Sometimes they're poisonous, they're danger noodles. It's absurd, right? It's
fucking, and this guy danger is just, noodles,
and this guy who's a no kidding coral snake. Yeah, it's red and yellow killfall, right? That's a coral snake.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, giant goofy grin, just dopey. He's just a dopey snake. This is just fucking adorable.
I think the only thing better would be if they named the game Snack Pass.
They might as well have Snack Pass. You play as a danger noodle trying to save the realm.
Oh, man. So let's give, do you want to give the rundown of what the game is and how it works?
It is a puzzle platformer, but it's in a sense of, like, you have to maneuver a snake around obstacles and climb obstacles in order to get to, I guess, floating water things. But your main goal is to get these keystones, which opens the gate to the next level, is what it comes down to. So you're navigating through, like, these bamboo things and like different structures and going through water, so it's like I guess like a really slow paced Snake Rattle and Roll.
Well, didn't Snake Rattle and Roll have like jumping in it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that did. It's like and that game was like notoriously difficult. This game's it's frustrating.
Because yeah, the controls, I can agree with that. The controls in this game are easily like, they make sense, but it goes against pretty much everything that you think of as a gamer.
It does. Like, you have to, well, I haven't had, like, a lot of games where I control Snake as a puzzle platformer. So, I mean, it is different. Like, you definitely have to, like, kind of relearn everything. Especially because, like, your go button is, like, you know, one of your triggers. Unless you have it set up for easy. There is an easy mode. Or easy control scheme where you look is where your snake moves.
Yeah.
But I think you have less control when you do it that way. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't really messed with it too much.
I jump between the two, and I just found myself going back to standard controls. I mean, I can totally understand what the whole trigger is go, because it's like a racing game. You hold the trigger down to go.
That makes sense. I can see that.
The weirdest thing for me with controlling Noodle the Snack, was the fact that if you're not, you need to think and move like a snake. Like, snakes don't just go straight. They slither left and right. And if you're not slithering left and right, you slow to a crawl.
Yeah, you go ball slow. I keep forgetting that too, yeah.
Like, there's times where I'm just like, I'm trying to get through an area, and he slows down. Like, god damn it, I'm not moving left and right.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as when you play any other platformer, you're not swerving left and right the whole time. So it,
no, you're not.
It is such a unique game to grasp control wise. And then, you know, a lot of the gameplay in most platformers, you just jump up things or you climb up things. With this, again, you have to remember that you are a snake. And how does a snake climb up things? It coils around, it grips things, and it slowly, like, twists its way up things. It's
yeah,
it is such a unique and hard to initially grasp concept.
I think you nailed it right in the head on that one. Like when you figure out the puzzle, like, oh, how do I get up the structure? It's like, oh, okay, I just coil all the way up. The other thing is like learning the grip motions and when to let go and when to grip.
Yeah,
gets a little frustrating, and also the when to not look up, because it sucks. You have to press a button to have your dopey fucking snick like look up. So you, that's how you initiate your climb.
Yeah.
It's the funniest thing. I actually started laughing because I had I'd gone out on a ledge to get the gold coins, one of the hard to get collectibles, right? And it's like, oh no, it's like I lost my grip and like started falling down. And for some reason, the animation of Noodle falling to his death is so freaking hilarious.
He gets such a worried look on his face, like, oh God, oh God, no. Oh God.
Yeah, no, like, if you fall off into the abyss, I mean, there's no, like, you lose progress. It's, like, the only thing you lose. Like, there's no lives. It is puzzle. It is more puzzle than platformer, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, I find it's that, because, like, you look at him, and, like, this dopey snake just looks up as if to say, this is it. This is how I die. It is freaking hilarious. And it's weird because he has this like really floaty, like, jump is the right term, but like it's like his fall is like really floaty. So I'm sure like there's other puzzles like later on where like you got to use that to your advantage.
Maybe. It's weird. It is such, the controls in the game are so unique. I mean, the more I played it, the more I would get accustomed to everything. But even still, there were times in some of the stages, some of the more complex structures that you need to climb up, where I would get most of the way up and then my tail would fall away I didn't expect. And I went to try and coil around something, but I went to coil and then the snake just doubled back the other way and I fell. And there was a lot of frustration with the controls in this game.
Yep.
Which it's a bummer. I am enjoying this game. I wish I could enjoy it more than I am. And a lot of it is because of how cumbersome the controls could be. Even if the snake moved exactly how I wanted it to move every time, you need to have a finger on the trigger to move forward. You need to have your thumb on the A button for lifting the snake's head to make sure that you're moving upwards. You need to have a finger on the other trigger to grip when need be. You want to have a thumb available to adjust the camera when need be, because, you know, it's a 3D platformer. Camera's not going to ever be where you need it to be.
Oh, it never is.
A lot of times you're going to need another finger to hit the Y button so that Doodle could lift up the back end of Noodle. And I don't own enough fingers to fucking do what I need to do.
Yeah, it's thankfully like the Doodle's a toggle, so it's just you just press it when you need it. I never got very far, unfortunately. So I haven't gotten any puzzles where like I need Doodle to actually let the snake tail up. And yeah, he will not save your life at all.
Yeah, I mean there's times I don't think he's necessary to complete anything. It's just one of those things where if your tail is starting to drag you down and it's about to screw you up, he can pick you up and kind of save you where you're at.
Yep.
But I don't think there's, or at least that I've seen, I don't think there's anything where it's required to have him.
Yeah.
It's more of like a convenience thing.
Yeah, I think in the more complicated ones, he's going to start being necessary. Like, or again, it's more the, oh, I jacked this up. Let's see if I can save myself a little bit. Grab a tail, get it off the table. Because damn that fun hummingbird. But yeah, man, it's I'm in the same boat. Like, it's like I want to enjoy this game more, but like it's, I mean, I'm glad like it's so far it's been a very low threat. Like, you're not running to, like, you're not running to enemies that's just trying to murder you right now.
It's great. I don't even think there's enemies in the game. It's more about, I think someone referred to it as a physics platformer, which makes sense because it's just about the platforming and the coiling and all that. I'm pretty sure there's no actual combat in the game. It's more about exploration and obviously collectibles because it's, you know, a 3D platformer with collectibles.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be a 3D platformer, or like, it wouldn't be a platform puzzle game if there wasn't collectibles, right?
And some of these collectibles, like, good lord.
I don't think the gold coins exist. Like, there are some levels where I have no idea where they could be.
Every stage has whatever keystones you need to collect to complete the stage. There are also, what is it, like, 25 or 30 wisps, elemental wisps that you could collect. And then every stage also has 5 golden coins. The first time I completed the first stage, I found 1 coin. Which goes to show that some of these are really friggin' hidden. Like, you gotta look out of your way. You're going to have to traverse places that you might not have normally gone to, and you are going to need to have near perfect control of your snake.
Yeah.
It just,
so, it sounds like you guys think like a snake the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
it is overall, it's just a very difficult game to control and get into. But I think if you have the patience to truly grasp the controls and become one with your inner snake, there's an awesome time to be found here. It's not the biggest game in the world. It's only 15 stages. But each stage, you know, it has all the collectibles in there that you could hunt through. It's not like you could complete a stage in 2 minutes and that's it. Like, if you're looking for everything, you can spend 20, 30 minutes on a stage.
With
all the hunting. So there's plenty of content in there. Oh man, just the controls, I think, are going to be the biggest hurdle for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, like, literally, it's controls. But, I mean, that's part of the game.
Yeah. Is there any kind of touchscreen implementation with the Switch version?
I can double check. Let me just bust this out right meow.
Right meow?
Right meow.
Because I was kind of wondering if the Switch would have any form of touchscreen aspects or anything special that sets it apart from the others, or if it's basically just a faithful reproduction of the game.
As far as I know, I think it's just a faithful reproduction, which is, you know, not bad. Let's see, I'm a little bit level right now. Oh god, I have to listen to Doodle tell me something about this level.
There's one of my other gripes: unskippable cutscenes. Like, when I load up a stage for the fourth time because I'm still trying to find one more coin and I've given up the other times, I don't want to watch a 2 minute long intro cutscene again. Like, please, developers, if you're listening, let us skip cutscenes. It blows my mind that there's still games these days that don't allow you to skip cutscenes. I can understand if it's your first time playing level, because they want you to make sure that you see the story or the goal or whatever else. But, you know, I already beat the stage. You know, I beat the stage because there's shit missing in the stage that I've already collected. Let me just skip the cutscene.
Yeah. Nothing special. I'm tapping the screen frantically right now. Nothing. No. But hey, portal mode is actually pretty cool. Like, this is definitely, like, one of those games where, like, you know what? This is going to make some progress.
So, yeah, that's, like, I think that's a good positive for the Switch version. This seems like a good game to just pick up and play on the road.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah, easy. Like, if you got time to kill and you're on the road or you're on a train or, you know, whatever, and, you know, you don't show off, like, this danger noodle trying to get some keystones for this, like, mystical location.
So overall, there what you do you go. Think? For $20, what are your thoughts on this?
$20 is at least a try it.
I can agree with that. I think it's definitely worth trying. The biggest obstacle is going to be if you have the patience to learn and grasp the controls. If you don't have the patience for that, just skip this one because you'll lose your goddamn mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man. So, Wood, thank you for joining us with this review. Do you have any final words on the game?
No. I think we said everything we needed to say about it.
Do you have any last Danger Noodle references to make?
No, I'm out.
Next game to talk about is called Rayon Riddles, Rise of the Goblin King, developed by Lost the Game Studios, published by Bit Composer Interactive, released March 21st on the PS4 for $11.99, previously available on Steam. The goblins have been displaced and enslaved. It's up to you to help them flee from the orcs and return to their homeland. Solve puzzles and escape orcs, trolls, and other creatures on an exciting and funny journey full of surprises. We got our good friend Chris Taylor to take care of this one. Chris, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Just playing some Rayon Riddles.
Playing two things for us this week.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
I keep saying us, but it's only me this episode, so that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm playing it for me, too, so that makes the two of us. So there we go.
The royal we.
The royal we. The editorial.
Tell me about Rayon Riddles. What is this game? It looks pretty cute.
Yeah, it's cute, I guess. It's a game where... Okay, so do you remember old games like Monkey Island or King's Quest or some other such where you walk around and like click on things and collect items in your inventory and then like put them together in weird ways to solve puzzles and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, this is like that, but in a weird platformer with really bizarre collision detection.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you run around as your little goblin guy, and you start off with only one. You actually have to rescue everybody else in the game. But for the first two levels, your tech, who is a tech-savvy goblin whose ability is to combine items that he finds on workbenches that he finds. And, you know, so, like, he can make a lockpick out of a feather and a bone, that sort of thing. And, so you play as him, and you basically run around the playing field trying to avoid the orcs, who, by the way, will only attack you if you walk just, like, straight up to them. They actually are just fine watching you, like, run around this little cave and stuff at the beginning of the game. They're just like, whatever. And then, you know, they just kind of stand there stupidly unless you go near them.
So they're just territorial.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm supposed to guard this door. It doesn't matter that there's something running around out there. Like, as long as he doesn't go to this door. And so you run around and you look at the items and figure out what the items do, you know, what function they may serve. And then you can pick them up only one at a time and place them in other places and just kind of figure out your way through the stage. The whole thing is narrated by basically the game's narrator, who we assume is another goblin. We never see him. And that was probably my favorite part. The narrator is actually pretty entertaining. And he offers usually sarcastic or witty, like, commentary on everything that you can look at. So in that sense, it kind of reminded me of the PlayStation Discworld games.
I used to love those.
Yeah, I do too, because it's Eric Idle of Monty Python.
Can't go wrong with Eric Idle.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this guy isn't Eric Idle, but...
Nobody besides Eric Idle is Eric Idle, let's be fair. Yeah,
exactly. But I would probably best describe his voice as like a community theater version of Alan Rickman. So, like, it's like Alan Rickman's voice, but not his chops. Because he overacts a little bit, like describing things, and like, you know, it's meant to be funny. It's a little bit like he's reading a children's story or something.
Mm.
So, and but yeah, I do like the narrator part of things. That's really cool. And let's see. So once you get all the puzzle stuff together and escape from the cave where you're initially imprisoned, then you rescue the quote-unquote most important character in the game is called King. It's the Goblin King, and he is utterly helpless. Your task then becomes to clear the path for him to be able to get through the stage without any sort of trouble. And if you try to get him to move without doing that, then he just frowns at you, and a little comic book picture of what is in his way, like, appears, and then you have to figure out your way to, you know, get rid of that obstacle. So, in the second stage, you save both him and Heavy, who is the second character that you get. And Heavy is much bigger than Tech, and he's able to pick up large items, although Tech is the only one that's able to actually use those items for something. So, that gives the game a little bit more of a Lost Vikings vibe. Like, do you remember that game?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. So you switch between the guy with the bow and arrow and the guy with the sword and the guy with the shield. And, like, you know, you have to sort of, you know, do things in order, switching between characters all the time. Well, that's how this is. So you might get one quest involved, as an example, you had to cross a bridge in order to proceed. And in order to cross the bridge, there's a troll there, and you have to pay off the troll with something made of gold. You have to pay the troll toll, if you will. you find your gold MacGuffin, and you start to get to the goblin, but then a bird, a huge bird, swoops out of nowhere and picks you up with the item, and takes you to its nest where it has been hoarding gold. So you can't get any gold to that troll until you get rid of the bird. So what you wind up doing is you find a mine shaft with like a workbench where you can, and then also has a furnace, so you can find a lump of gold, steal it from the bird, take it over to the furnace, melt it down, and then you find a giant lead weight that you have to have Heavy carry over there. And then he basically melts down the gold and plates the lead weight, so it's like this huge gold thing. And then Heavy starts to take that back over to the goblin, and then the bird picks it up, and then the weight becomes too much for the bird, but instead of letting it go, the bird just gets weighed down and slams into the side of a mountain. And then you can pick up just any gold object and take it to that goblin or that troll, and then that part of the quest is clear. So it's usual puzzle solving stuff like that, and that is just about the entire game is doing quests like that.
And it sounds like a fun kind of, I don't know about open world-ish, but just 3D exploratory adventure platformer.
Yeah, and I said that it was a little weird on collision detection. It's because you can, in some weird ways, like, you can run up the side of a mountain or some, like, straight-up thing and get kind of trapped in it, or you can get trapped behind objects that aren't even taller than your foot, and then you have to, like, explode your character by pushing a button. And it doesn't penalize you at all for exploding your characters. You don't even have to start over. It just moves them over somewhere else. But it's still, like, one of those things where it's like, I see they've maybe had a not the most time to check this for bugs, so they're just like, well, let's just put a suicide button here so that players don't get trapped forever. So there's that aspect of it. But on the flip side of that, what I like about this game is, you mentioned it's kind of open world. There actually usually are more than one ways to skin a cat, as you were, or as if you will, because like one of the earlier puzzles, again, it involves going over a bridge, but it's a guard that'll just kill you if you walk up to him. And it turns out I found two different ways to actually get across that thing. So you can either remove a stone from a larger stone and let that larger stone go into the river, which runs into a bridge, which knocks the troll over into the water. So that's one way. Or you can actually find a tree that looks a lot like a slingshot. Like the game tells you, it suspiciously looks like a slingshot. And then elsewhere, and I've noticed that there's at least one of these in every stage, you find a rubber chicken that you can then attach to the tree as a rubber band and then slingshot yourself over the bridge. And either way, it works just fine. They're both fairly easy things to figure out, and, you know, they both achieve the same goal. So, nice. And plus, it has rubber chicken, so how can it be bad?
Yeah, can't go wrong with rubber chickens. Overall, for $12, what do you think?
Overall, okay, so I would recommend trying it as a try-it, with the caveat that if you are really, really into this kind of puzzle making, that is to say, just, you know, looking around the world, picking up random things and combining them in a weird way to get through the quest, which is something that's so much like Discworld that Discworld actually makes fun of it in the game. Like, they actually mock this kind of puzzle game while being that kind of puzzle game. If that is the kind of game you like, this is probably one of the few options as far as new games go that you're going to find. And certainly at $12, that's about as much as you'd be paying. I mean, I don't know that there are any full retail price games that are like this.
Yeah. So basically if you have a hankering for the old school adventure games of yore.
Yeah. And you know, it's not something, even though it looks a little bit kiddish, like literally the goblins have toy joints for whatever reason, like G.I. Joe's. Like, I haven't figured that out. Maybe Rayon is Riddles is based on some kind of toy line in England or something. I don't know. But I could not find that info. I Googled, like, to try and figure out why they look like toys, but I guess they just do.
Maybe in the end it's all just a child playing with toys.
Maybe. I mean, it is. I'm a 34-year-old child playing with toy goblins trying to figure out how to make them cross bridges.
Nice.
For $12, if you are a puzzle game enthusiast and you just like the basic mental challenge of, like, I have no idea what anything does, but I'm going to combine it all until it works, this is the game for you. Otherwise, I wouldn't go in expecting much in the way of story or graphics or music or anything like that. It's pretty bare bones on all other fronts. But the puzzle part of it is pretty legit.
Sounds good. And, you know, gameplay is what matters the most in the end anyway, right?
There you go.
All right, we got one more game that you're taking care of for us today. And that is called Old Time Hockey. This one is developed and published by V7 Entertainment. Released March 28th on PlayStation 4 and Steam for $11.99. Coming later this year to the Xbox One and the Switch, aggressive hockey is back in town. Experience hockey the way it was meant to be played in this old-school arcade-style hockey game where blood on the ice is just another day at the rink. 70s afros, big mustaches, no helmets, dirty hits, bench-clearing brawls, goalie fights, stick fights, ref abuse, and locker room language. That's old-time hockey. This sounds incredible. Chris, what do you think?
Well, okay, so first I have to qualify this by saying I have never really played much hockey before as far as, like, video games go. I played a little bit of the NES stuff, which, of course, as you know, we had, what was it, Blades of Steel on by Konami that had the cinematic fight scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it reminded me a little bit of that. So it is a hockey game. It's got a nice, it's got a licensed soundtrack of various songs about hockey or just sort of basic stuff. And, you know, you get in and it's got colorful teams, colorful commentary, and all the characters are fake and kind of goofy. I didn't see any afros, though. Like, maybe I missed one.
Maybe.
But... definitely a lot of mustaches and no helmets. That is definitely true. So it's a hockey game that basically is a little bit more arcade style. You can get into fights, and apparently, I don't know about real hockey, but there's just no consequence for getting into fights. It will put you into a cinematic mode where you have basic fighting style controls, and if you score three hits, you win. So
nice.
I feel like that's especially good for two player mode. It's a little bit. The fighting part of it reminded me exactly of Urban Champions on the NES, that old launch title.
Oh God.
Mm-hmm. And so I gave this one a spin. I decided to play in story mode because I was like, okay, story mode should have some kind of tutorial where it tells me what to do. And the very first stage, it's like you have to knock a goalie out of play or something like that. You have to hit somehow knock over this one guy, and then you have to get to what it called poke checks. And I was like, what's a poke check? So I pull up the settings menu, and it has a how to play, and it has a control scheme and all this other stuff. And I was like, okay, let's read here. And I scroll through, I find poke check. It's like, push R1 when you're next to a character, and they'll reach out their stick and try to take the puck away. And it was just like one or two sentences, and I was like, all right, cool. And so the thing about the story mode is that until you do that, you don't get to pass that stage. You don't even have to win the game. You just have to do those three objectives, which is a little bit like some other games I've played. I can't really remember right now, but because you're like the bottom of the barrel, like hockey team, you play as the Bruise. That is to say, like the. What is it, the Bruise? No, there must be something else. I've already forgotten, and I just played it 30 minutes ago. either way, so I spent most of this game like losing terribly because I was just trying to figure out, I was like, okay, poke check, got to push R1, and any time one of my players got near the other player, I was just sitting there jamming R1, and they would just sit there like, do-do-do-do-do, and then, you know, they get a hit on me, and I was like, ugh. I was like, I can't figure this out. Is this game broken or something? And so I go over to an exhibition game. I decided to quit for the time being. But exhibition games are just a straight-up one-on-one team play. And I picked my team, actually the same team. I felt a little bit of camaraderie there. So I get in, and I start playing, and... I wasn't doing that well at first, especially in, like I say, you know, I couldn't figure out how to get my players to do anything with the basic controls, which is just a two-button control scheme. And, also there's actually a beer mode, which lets you control the game one-handed so that you can
drink. That is amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But I was like, I need advanced control, so I have full, I know exactly what to do with my characters. So I switch it over to advanced mode, which uses everything, like all the parts of the controller. And so I go into this exhibition game, and I familiarize myself with the controls, and I won the game 10-0. I completely slaughtered them. And I was like, why can't I do this story mode thing then? So I go back to story mode, and just like maybe an hour later, I figured out that you have to select the character before he'll do anything that you tell him to do. So I was going.
It was a case of user error.
Kind of. The game never tells you about that. Turns out that's just the thing that all hockey games have done since the very beginning of hockey games. You always have to choose your character before he'll do the exact thing you want him to do.
Shocking.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I'm just bad at sports games. Like, I just haven't... I don't have this frame to draw from to know that in any kind of team-based sports video game, you have to choose the player. And once I did that, then, yeah, you know, I got the objective and moved on, and the next thing had more objectives, and it was harder. But I was like, all right, so I got this now. And so it's like I started off being really frustrated at this game, but I was like, well... What it is that it's a good hockey game, especially for, you know, $11.99 is how much you said it was?
Yep.
Like $12, basically. I was like, yeah, for $12, this is fine, and this would be great with two players because it's so, it's very arcadey. Like, the action is really easy to control, like, especially get good puck control if you're going for the goal. And that's the reason why I was able to win that exhibition match so well, is because I was like, oh, okay, because it actually, you know, they shoot it where I want them to shoot it. because the when you're playing offense, the game automatically selects whoever's got the puck and you control them.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do that on defense. That's the that is what was tripping me up. And so yeah, once I won that game, I was like, "Oh, okay, this is cool." And so that's my adventure with old time hockey. Is it's my adventures in learning how hockey works at all.
wasn't Catherine there to help you with the hockey rules?
Yeah, she had no idea what a poke what we were trying to do. The poke check. Mm. Turns out what it is when you're directly facing the skater with the puck, so you have to either be skating backwards or crossing. You push the button and they reach out their stick and just try to jab the puck away from them, and if they do that successfully, that's a poke check. There's also a kind where you bump into the guy or something. I don't know. I still don't have it figured out, but I sure know how to poke check now.
Nice.
Actually, I wound up losing the game, which didn't matter because it let me pass anyway, but I lost the game because I just kept trying to do the poke check thing now that I had it. And so it's like I would steal the puck and then not do anything with it. Then they'd get a hold of it, and they would try to get their goal. And I was pretty good at defense on that, but at the same time, I think they wound up beating me 18-3.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, but that's okay. Game lets you move on anyway if you get the objectives. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of what story mode has to offer, but seeing as how I used up almost all my time trying to figure out one simple move, I don't know exactly how in-depth the story goes. I imagine you just go from being the worst team to being a better team and the best team, and, you know, Mighty Duck style.
Yeah. So how's the humor in the game? I know this game is, it prides itself on low-brow, low, I don't know, crass, just gross humor. Even the screenshots, it looks like the Nets are ball sacks.
See, I didn't see any of that, so I'm wondering where that's coming from. It must be later. To me, it's about as funny as, like, NBA Jam. It's just like sometimes the puck's on fire and you shoot into the net and the net catches fire. When you fight the guys, you can after you beat them, you get about 10 seconds where you can just do whatever you want to them.
Yeah. So
just like keep on pounding on them. I didn't catch any like off-color language or anything, and certainly no ball sack nets. So that must be later in the game. Or perhaps
I'm just checking out the screenshots on Steam, and it just looks like the hockey nets are shaped like nut sacks.
Maybe they are. Maybe that's, I don't know. Like, I'd have to look at the same screenshots here.
Chris, you clearly need to look at more nut sacks.
Apparently. I just have no idea. I have no idea what one looks like.
Well, Chris, we're going to have to teach you what some of these things are.
Okay, I'm looking at screenshots and stuff. This all looks like the game. How the game looks. I'm not seeing those nutsack things though.
Yeah, just the nets, the roundness of the nets.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's just something that didn't. Maybe that's something I didn't catch. Maybe I'm not dirty enough as a person.
Maybe that's just more a problem with me, I guess.
Oh, now I'm seeing them. Yeah, is that not how a hockey net looks?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe, there you go.
Maybe
then.
The old ones did. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, this is supposed to take place in the 70s for that. So for that reason, yeah, you see like a bunch of people smoking indoors and like everybody's got that mullety, like long hair and big mustaches and stuff. Like it definitely looks like an old thing.
Nice.
All the fonts are old fashioned too.
So yeah, bottom line for $12. What are your thoughts?
Hey, if you're a hockey fan and you already kind of know how to play basic sports games, yeah, go ahead and get it, for sure. It's fun. It's fast. You can set things to be really fast playing, or you can draw them out a little bit more. The beer mode is pretty cool. Like I said, you can, you know, just control the whole thing with one hand, or the advanced controls gives you, like, all this control over the action, so, you know.
So if you're a fan of the more sim-style hockey games, those options are there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how in-depth it goes, obviously, because I don't know hockey games that well. But for me, I was like, oh, yeah, I could totally come back to this and, you know, keep doing it until I've got it. And yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm certain once you get past the beginning parts of the game, it probably gets more, you know, off the cuff, like sort of body and whatever else it's advertising itself as.
Yeah. I think looking at some of the reviews out there online, my favorite one is you get into the game and immediately memories of NHL on Genesis come to mind. You play it just as you remembered, and then you proceed to lose hardcore. After several frustrating losses, the game's title will remind you what this is. Old-time hockey. You need to be aggressive, not just in scoring, but to others. You want to get in fights, bash people's faces in. You need to beat other people up.
That is very true. The game's, like I said, one of the requirements is that you have to knock over a certain player and you have to take a goalie out of the game. So,
and that's another review. Scored 12 goals, racked up 142 penalty minutes, and injured both opposing goalies before the second period ended.
Yeah, it can easily devolve into that. And I mean, with a game I do know, like baseball, that reminds me of Base Wars Cyber Stadium on the NES.
Oh, nice.
Where it's like you had to fight. If you wanted to steal bases, you could, and that's actually a great way to get points. And the only penalty, if they catch you, is that you have to fight them Mortal Kombat style. So, and if you win, then you get the base.
That is
amazing.
I
think I scored 100 points over the computer once.
Holy God. That's him.
Yeah. So this is that kind of game for sure. If you're good and you're really aggressive, and like I play aggressively anyway, so that's probably why I did so well in exhibition.
Nice.
But yeah, the game gives you a lot of, like, the computer's not super smart, especially if you're just playing on the easiest modes. So you can totally wind up destroying them and stuff. And yeah, I did play the first few rounds like totally expecting there to be some kind of penalty for all these fights I was getting into, but then it turns out no, that's just how it is.
That's just the point of the game.
Yeah. You can cheat very many, like quite a few times before the ref catches you.
That's and it awesome. Doesn't
yeah, and it doesn't stop the action or anything. You just keep going.
Nice. Well, Chris, yeah. Thank you for your input on those two games. I'm probably going to have to pick both of them up myself. And hopefully the Switch and Xbox versions of Old Time Hockey aren't too far behind.
Yeah, hopefully. It's definitely, it does make me think Xbox when I play it, so.
Nice. That's good to hear. I like when you think Xbox. Oh, Chris, do you have any final words to wrap up those two games? Any final thoughts on the both of them?
Yeah, basically, it's what we have here is a couple of pretty solid games that fit solidly into their niches. Niches.
Solid.
Yeah. Solid, yo.
All right, and final game to talk about today is called Arcade Archives Neo Geo. Yes, we got another one of these. The King of Fighters 95. Console diversion developed and published by Hamster, released March 30th on Xbox One for $7.99. King of Fighters 95 is a fighting game released by SNK in 1995. Shocking. In addition to the character of popular works such as Fatal Fury and Art of Fighting, in the sequel title of the previous work, King of Fighters 94, the fuck, Yamagane? God, words. Will participate as the rival of main character Kyo Kusanagi. Seriously, these names, they're killing me. With the team edit function installed, it is possible to form a team with the player's favorite character. I'm getting nailed with all the English today. Anyway, this is another game, another release in the Arcade Archive series on the Xbox One. Pernell and I talked about the series in general on one of our previous episodes. Any kind of issues performance-wise that we've had before, like if any kind of achievement or notification pops up, you'll get that lag issue going on. That's still present. I don't know if Hamster is working on improving the emulation or their emulator engine in general to handle those pop-ups and notifications, but fingers crossed they take care of that. King of Fighters 95 is drastically, drastically easier and more user-friendly than King of Fighters 94. Because it is an arcade game, it still does have some pretty rough difficulty spikes. I know even the first round on single player, I had to kind of cheese the computer to get through it. But after that one, I actually did fairly decently going through the game. But that first battle, I replayed it, God, like half a dozen times trying to beat it. So there are definite difficulty spikes and moments of frustration. One of the biggest gripes with King of Fighters 94 was that you can only have pre-made teams of three, where in this one they have a team edit function. So you could go any of the characters of the, I believe, eight different teams of three people and create your own team. So you are not locked into a set lineup. Gameplay is your standard 2D fighting game, and it's nice and smooth. It plays well. Again, the difficulty issues that were there in King of Fighters 94 are lessened greatly, and it, compared to King of Fighters 94, this is an improvement in every possible conceivable way. For $8, if you're going after one of the fighting games in the Neo Geo ACA series, I think this one's definitely worth checking out. If you're not into fighting games, it's not going to do it for you. Overall, for $8, it's worth a try it. So, yeah, those are all the reviews for today. Music from Brenno Floss. So thanks again to Brent and Julian for coming by and hanging out. And thanks to you for listening, even though I don't have anyone else here talking with me and I'm just kind of rambling. So music from Brenno Floss. Final words for today are by Use Your Words, because it's hilarious. And I'm bad at doing this by myself.
What if the Earth Bound had lyrics?
Here we go. Gather around. Let's play Earthbound, a game that's sure to please. It's a sequel to some other game, which is all in Japanese. One night, a glowing meteor comes down from outer space. There's a kid named Ness, and wouldn't you guess, he's gonna save the human race. So he gives his mom a kiss, and with the family like this, it's no wonder that he goes it alone. No, I mean his little baby sis, she runs a courier service, and yes, his father is a telephone.
You're stepping on my cord, son.
This title shines. It's sharp and funny yet creepy, with wacky lines like who needs water for pee-pee. But hey, that's Earthbound, that's why we love it. Though if you don't like it, feel free to shove it. Ness has a quest to fix the things that are wrong with Americans, like religious weirdos, mindless zombies, and illegal aliens. Oh, a psychic girl, a science nerd, and a ninja join the crew, taming animals by hitting them, cause that's what heroes do. It's a crazy universe where a rookie front desk nurse can reanimate your slaughtered friends. Oh, where you buy some farm fresh eggs and in 5 minutes they've got legs, because now they're frickin' full grown hens. Yeah, sing it, chickens.
Bark, 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 bark.
And that is Earthbound, that's why we love it. So if you don't like it, feel free to shove it. It's goofy, but I don't mind, cause it's the kind of a great adventure you might find in the heart of a child going wild. Let's hit the ATM. I've got like 80 grand in the bank.
Money, money.
Cause my dad's never home. He's a phone sending cash to say sorry.
Sorry, I'm a phone.
We could have bought some stock.
Bought some stock, bought some stock.
Or fed a third world country.
Save the children, save the children.
But we're kids, so we choose to get stuff we can use to fight robots. Is that cool or what?
Boing.
They fight through winter snows
and lands of leisure.
They get two things from foes, nightmares and seizures. So now they're forced to grind. Fights last forever. Reach level 99. The end is nigh.
Boing.
Have a cup of coffee. Suddenly it's trippy. Telephone your mother. This is just another average boy meets girl. Boy meets boy meets boy. Boy becomes a robot story. Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Four robotic friends hold fast, traveling into the past. They meet the source of evil there, and
best him through the power of prayer. Kinda rips off Final Fantasy IV, but Earthbound's still a game that we adore. That we adore.
JJ Fofo!
This game is strange, but it has charming and smart jokes, and it has range, including two or three fart jokes, and that's my Earthbound. That's why I love it. So if you don't like it, feel free to shove it. Come on, everybody! Say Fuzzy Pickles! You know what I love? Earthbound.
Where's Mega Man? Where's Mega Man? The Mega Poo just hit the fan. It's 2,000 eggs, and Wily has escaped and built 8 more evil bots. Where's that guy I know with balls like a rhino? Oh, where if I had to guess what I say on the roof? Let's translate up in search of proof. Perhaps he is there and flaunting his hair. 1, 2, 3, 4, Mega, Mega, Mega Man. He's up on the effing roof.
He's Mega,
Mega, Mega, Mega Man. Heroic and aloof. Mega, Mega, Mega Man. Now back what you would say.
Mega,
Mega, Mega, Mega Man. To save the effing day. 8 more robot masters. Mega Man is stronger. The Metal Man and Air Man use the arm cannon blaster. Air on crash, metal on flash, metal on bubble, bubble on heat, heat on wood. If finally with any sort of a dip, any scratch bombs, and you're good.
Oh, Mega, Mega, Mega Man.
Nintendo got it right.
Now Sega.
Mega, Mega, Mega Man. Cyan, like Chopin, and Lodin, Mega Barrel!
Mega Barrel!
This is Mission Control. We are go for liftoff in T-minus 20 seconds and counting.
Wait a minute, Houston. There seems to be a duck on board.
A what?
I repeat, a duck in a top hat.
Roger that.
Ducks! Yes, ducks in outer space from the Disney. Suit a bear. How are you alive?
How are you alive?
You need heat.
You need heat.
Also air.
Also air.
That's gotta be one expensive game. You are up on the moon looking for treasure. You've gotta save.
Ooh,
crazy duck in space. Yeah, you're really greedy and you're old. You got a creepy Scottish accent too, and you're big. From Africa to Asia to cold Antarctica. I always thought that that's too far away in wintertime, but you took it way too far to go, way too far to go. Wait, Uncle Scrooge, won't you take me along? You're a nincompoop, but it's such a great song. Though you're a bird, you're no wise old owl. Houston, we have a problem. Our shuttle captain's a raving waterfowl. Oh my god, he is a crazy duck in space. Do your nephews miss you? Please go back. Keep on finding gold and jewels. Just say off the quack, off the quack. It's a pun and it's about ducks.
Oh, Scrooge McDuck, you're on the Scrooge McDuck, you're on the Scrooge McDuck, you're on the.
Thank you.
the night they roamed the land.
It was grand.
Till a fateful day they roamed astray, and his lady love was sealed away. Alone was he. Oh, but then the land was seized by a league of bad knights, namely these, led by this evil miss.
Now an evil light's begun to shine bright, so steal thy shovel and fight.
Strike the earth right in its butt, poor treasures await. Excavate, you're gonna defy the laws of swords and fishing. Never need bait, just sit and wait, thrill in your fate. Watch for rats, exploding rats, helicopter rats, and wind-up rats. There's lots of rats.
Bitter Pat
can also talk to a six-foot cock or a knight right out of Bioshock, then kick his butt. Journey on and sleep till dawn. Have a dream and wake up, woe be gone.
Oh, chivalry, where is she?
We don't ever know unless you heave ho. To the Tower of Fate you must go.
Ghosts abound, so pound them with your balls of light. What a sight! Yes, go and combine the greatest parts of DuckTales and Mega Man,
Castlevania,
and Zelda 2. Thy trouble, it's up to you.
You plan to ban a whole religion from our borders, but please tell us all about your dick. You want to reinstate waterboarding and torture, but please tell us all about your dick. Why wouldn't we put our trust in you when clearly every other thing you said was true? I mean, right? You would tank the economy and raise gas prices, but please go on about your dick. You said you want to kill the innocent families of ISIS, but oh, let's fawn about your dick. Why wouldn't we believe that you're large and proud? Especially when you went to the trouble of saying it out loud, because that just logically follows key change. The dead founding fathers can't help but toss and turn, but please clarify about your dick. You'd nuke Antarctica just to watch it burn, but please don't deny us all the dick. And when we look back and wonder why the world's on fire underneath the black sky, we'll think as we rummage for food at the dump and realize it started with President Trump. But please tell us all, and don't forget to elaborately describe your balls. Yes, please tell us all about your dick. It's short and it's skinny and it looks like a stick.